Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
On the planet, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
June 26th.
Again, we're coming to you from the future.
Yes. So really plenty has happened while that we don't know about. Sorry.
Chris is going off to Connecticut. Boy, you pick the best places to vacation to, don't you, buddy?
Yeah, I do. It's just so awesome there.
At least it's summer, though. So
it is summer. And I'm doing more there. I'm going to go to Newport this year. I'm going to go to New York. I might go to Boston. I might actually see Rush. Again, when I'm up there. So,
don't forget your shirt.
Yeah, I'm going to pack it. Don't worry. And try to sell it to somebody up there for $60. But, yeah, I'm going to go on vacation. So, we're taping the show early, as we always do. And, you know, someone's either going to die or something's going to happen that we missed out on. So, we're hoping that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if it does, don't blame us.
Well, one thing it is going to happen, and hopefully it doesn't resolve us all before people listen, but Vanessa Russo has been picked to be part of the cast for this season's Big Brother, which, of course, is CBS's summertime voyeuristic game show. And also in the cast is a poker dealer as well, too, so lots of poker people to watch on Big Brother this summer.
You know, it just seems that these reality shows are attracted to poker personalities.
Why
do you think that is?
Well, definitely we know in Survivor they've come out and they've been blatant about that. We just love the way that the poker players' minds work. We think it works great for our game, that, you know, the strategy and how people do it. So Big Brother's a little bit different. Now, I know you're a big Survivor fan like I am.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever talked about Big Brother, but we're huge Big Brother fans, too. I don't know if you are.
No, I never actually got into that one.
Watch it? Yeah, okay. So it's a different style. I mean, it's 3 hours a week. It's a lot less tightly edited,
right?
Obviously, right? Because it's live, right? So they do one live episode every week and then two recorded ones, but they're just editing a bunch of footage that happens that week. So it's not as tight, obviously, as Survivor. But I really like it because it comes off as it truly is voyeuristic. You're watching these people live in the house. And, you know, things are going on, and you see him react for the entire summer. I mean, the finale is not going to be until September sometime. So think about that, being trapped in this house for 3 or 4 months straight, you know, with people you don't know and doing these stupid challenges and, you know, missing your loved ones and making new friends and, you know, backstabbing people. It's an exhausting show. I don't think I could ever want – this is the one I wouldn't want to be on. Survivor, put me on the helicopter tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
And that stuff, but Big Brother would just be a stretch. So, but this is the first time that somebody that I know has been on it, and I think it's gonna be a lot of fun to watch her. And you know, as I was telling some friends, because my wife and a couple of our friends, we do a Big Brother fantasy game every year. So the four of us, we do a draft and everything, and
right.
Have points and stuff, right? And so this year, I'm like, hey, Vanessa Russo got picked, and I'm like, I know her, and I'm sending pictures of her with me and stuff, right? And but what I told them, what I'm most excited about, and you know this, right, is that Vanessa's a huge game theory expert.
Right.
And I really want to see how well she applies that to Big Brother. And obviously the problem with these shows is that once they figure out who you are, and they figure out that you're a poker player and made millions of dollars, whether she still has millions of dollars or not, I don't know, right? But as soon as you get that tag, then they both out, right?
Yeah, just like they have baseball players on.
Right, yeah, survivors. Yeah. And they're like, hey, you don't need the money. And I want to kick those people for that because I would want to be on this just to play the experience in the game. you know, obviously the $1 million is nice, but, you know, it should be the person that, that does the best, right? That wins, not just because, oh, you're rich, we got to get rid of her. Yeah. So I'm worried that Vanessa's not going to last very long because of that reason, but I hope she does because I just want to see how she – I want to see her game theory in practice, you know. I've sat and watched her play poker every once in a while, but you can't, you don't really see game theory in practice when you're watching someone, even on TV when they edit it, right?
Right.
But on this show, you can. And then the other thing, too, that, that folks that don't watch don't know, but you can actually do a – you subscribe to the live stream if you want. I've never done that, but I don't know how much it is. But you can actually literally watch a 24/7.
When it's on live on TV, do they do like a split screen and all that so they can like – okay, look, Vanessa's in the bathroom. Let's go in there and see what's going on. And
then no, when they do the live show is actually scripted to a degree, so that's when they do the live vote and everybody together. And so, yeah, so it's not like that. Now, if you want to watch Big Brother After Dark, which used to be on Showtime, now it's on TV Guide channel or something, that's like 3 hours every night where it's just what you're talking about. Wow. There's no commentary. They're just they switch from camera to camera. And watch it. Now, I've watched, as big of a fan as I am of Big Brother, I've never watched that. That's a little too much for me. But it's an interesting thing where you can actually see everything. You know, on Survivor, you don't get to see any of that raw footage.
Right.
It's 44 minutes a week for the end of the season, right?
Right.
So I think it's going to be interesting. And, you know, a couple of my friends, obviously, when I said something like that, well, I hope people don't figure out who she is. And I'm like, well, another person on the cast is a poker dealer. Pretty sure her cover's blown already.
Yes, that's right.
I imagine there might be a poker player out in the world that doesn't know who Vanessa Russo is, but I doubt it. And certainly not one that's gregarious enough to apply to be on Big Brother. So, but then the other thing, too, with Big Brother, their little mantra is expect the unexpected. There's always twists during the season and stuff. And one year the twist was that half the people knew somebody in the game. You know, maybe they dated like 5 years ago or something, right?
Right.
And then you watched them to see whether they wanted to keep that secret, but they didn't know that other people were that way too, right? So I'm wondering if there's part of this twist where this dealer knows Vanessa already and not just knows her from being a pro, right?
Because it would be cool if, like, she tried to blackmail Vanessa throughout the show. Like, hey.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I'll tell you who you are. Well, that happens all the time. It happens. Well, you see that on Survivor, right? With the John Rocker. And
yeah,
stuff.
John Rocker, yeah.
Oh, I know who he is, but, you know, no one else does. And so, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I hope she lasts a while, but I don't have a lot of hope that she will just because of being who she is. But there's also a WWE wrestler this year on the show, too. They don't usually put a lot of celebrities on here because, really, how many celebrities want to spend 4 months?
Oh, I know.
Out of life, right? You know, this is why we've never seen a celebrity survivor because celebrities don't even want to do 30 days, you know, away from their careers. So, so I don't know. I'm looking forward to it just because I love the show and now to see somebody, and particularly because of the game theory. I really hope she lasts at least a couple weeks so I could see some of that in practice.
But I'm sure she chatted with Alex Jacob about game theory.
Yeah,
she went on there, but that should be kind of fun, and you know, and she's a polarizing person too, so that always makes her good stuff.
She
on
could
TV.
Be, she's less polarizing, I think, than some other poker players she put on there. Like, you know, hey, let's put Alan Kessler on there. That'd be awesome. Right?
Oh yeah.
but yeah, you know, we'll see. You know, but the other thing too is, I mean, obviously, she's an attractive woman, and attractive women tend to last a little longer on these shows because you got a bunch of big dumb jock guys that just want. You know, because there's a lot of downtime, right?
Yeah, right.
You're hanging out by the pool all the time. It's nice. Who do you want to vote out this week? The pretty girl in the bikini or the guy with his underwear halfway down his ass?
Yep. As long as they don't talk about cops. They talk about cops, then she's gonna get voted out pretty quick. She's probably going to lose it.
You know, maybe there's going to be a challenge where they ask somebody to pronounce the word G-H-O-T-I. You know she's going to nail it now, right? But definitely turn it into CBS, and we're looking forward to talking about this as it goes on, as long as she stays on the show.
Oh, you know, I this is embarrassing, because I was, for some reason, I was just thinking of Vanessa Selps when I said that about the cops, not Vanessa Russo. I don't know what I was thinking.
I wonder where you're going, but I figured you knew something I didn't.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was thinking of Vanessa Selps for some reason. I don't know why. But yeah, people are going to know her from commercials and stuff too, if they paid attention enough to tell.
Well, the other thing too, she's a GoDaddy girl.
Yeah, GoDaddy, exactly.
She's not the Danica Patrick GoDaddy girl, but you know.
Yeah.
Recognizable.
That's cool.
All right, so the NFL has banned three Miami Dolphins from participating in a $94 celebrity poker tournament because it violates league policy of not participating in casino events. Not a shock, because they've had this policy, but every time it happens, just it's a reminder of just how ridiculous it is, isn't it?
At $94, and it's celebrity the charity thing. I mean, come on.
I couldn't figure out if it was a charity. I actually put charity down, then I looked back, I'm like, it's just a celebrity. But anyhow, well, let's say it's a charity event, because it wouldn't change anything, right?
Yeah.
The charity event, they still would say, hey, you can't play.
That's just ridiculous.
And, obviously, I just got back from Vegas, right? And I was talking to my aunt and uncle who live a little bit south of Vegas. And we're talking about, you know, how Vegas was desperate to get a professional team of some sort in there, right? They have a AAA baseball team, but that's it. They don't have any NHL or NFL or Major League Baseball or, you know, those kind of teams, right? And one of the reasons that they don't is because of fear of them being in Vegas that the team's going to be corrupted in the sports book, because that's the only place you can legally wage your own sports, right?
Right.
And that's really what's driving all of this, is that they don't want these players to get in a position where they're fixing games, which, you know, 1965, all right, fine. You know, you're an all-pro poker player, or an all-pro football player, and you make $12 a week, right? But now these guys make, you know, $12 a millisecond, right? I really don't see these guys fixing games to put food on the table with their families, right?
It's ridiculous.
Seems like we've evolved, and we still left this in, back in the 1960s.
It's a temptation, maybe. To me, it's just a temptation. I don't know, but it makes no difference geographically. How does that matter? You know, especially with technology today, you can place a wager from anywhere in the world. Why does it matter that your team is located in Vegas? It just is stupid.
Yeah. Stupid. And you know, I get why the NFL does it. I mean, you can't pick and choose. You know, you don't want to spend all the time like, all right, well, this one you can play in because it is, and this one you can't. So it's just easier just to say no and ban everything, and everybody knows. But it is a little bit – this is the classic, you know, using a hammer when a fly swatter would do,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
There should be some kind of, you know, hey, you can't be Pete Rose. You can't be betting on the games. But, you know, if you want to go play poker, which is a completely legal thing in South Florida, then go play poker.
Right. Ridiculous. I mean, we're talking $95.
Whatever. Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like it's, all right, you're entering a $30,000 high roll or something. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's got to be some sort of, you know, common sense context for these things. And it's not in place.
It's not.
Sad.
All right. Well, obviously, we're catching up on the World Series of Poker every week. We're going to be a little bit behind here because we're recording early. And then we're going to have to catch up with the rest of it. It's going to be almost over by the time we get back. But
yeah,
a couple things through Event 27 from the last show we've been on. Daniel Alaya, is it?
Alahi.
Alahi. Won his fifth bracelet and the 10,000 buy-in Omaha 8. He's only 30 years old. And so people were asking, is he going to be the next Phil Hellmuth?
I tell you, I remember when he didn't have any bracelets. And when he won the first one, because he's such a good player, when he was on all the high stakes poker on TV and all that stuff, he's such a good player. And to have five, and the amount of span of time that he got in those five is pretty impressive. And you know, the thing about it too is these guys can rack up some bracelets because they're playing in the larger events, so the smaller fields, you know, larger line events.
The stud event, the 10K stud event, they should get fewer than 100 players.
Yeah. So I mean, if you can afford it and you can play on that level, I can see him racking up some serious bracelets here because he's good at all the games too. It's not like he's just a holding player, you know what I mean? So he could do something pretty significant. I don't know if he's the next Phil Hellmuth, but he can catch, like, you know, Doyle and stuff pretty quickly, I think.
Well, yeah, this is the kind of thing we always do with baseball too, right? You always put that little split screen on, you know, the fastest player to get to 100 home runs, and, you know, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's got five at age 30. I'm thinking, what, Hellmuth won the main event, what was that, 88? Something like that? Some of them mid to late 80s?
No, it was 89 because it was...
All right, 89? All right, yeah, okay.
2010 to 87, 88.
Right, so that's been, what, 26 years, right? So he's won 14 bracelets in 26 years. and this guy's won 5 and probably 9, let's say. Right. Let's say, you know, no more than 9. And there are a ton of events now that there weren't back then, too. So, you know, as long as Phil stays on his game, he's can continue to put some separation between them. But, you know, this is definitely not a Joe DiMaggio thing, I don't think. I don't think it's one of these records that we're not going to see broken. I think you're going to see Helmuth at the table at age 70 trying to fend off this guy.
Oh,
no,
man.
Really, I can play one more time!
If I didn't have to have Metamucil, I'd win them all. But no, really, he is a talented player. And I do think it's going to take a player like this that can play the upper echelon events with the smaller fields to have to do it. Because if you have to weed your way through 3,000 to 20,000 people to win your bracelet, you're not going to win 20 of them.
Very difficult.
So right. It's going to need somebody who's a really good pro who can afford these huge buy-ins. And he's on his way. I mean, you got to remember, too, there's still, you know, Ivy. You know what I mean? He's still right there. Sure. And he's he plays as many of these big events, and he can afford it. And he's better than pretty much everybody in the world. So he may catch Helmuth, but, you know, we may be saying someday, is he going to catch Ivy? Because Ivy's going to catch Helmuth, probably. So we'll see.
This next one I love. Christian Pham thinks he's registered for a $1,500 no limit hold'em event. Sits down, realizes no, it's no limit deuce to 7. Proceeds to learn the game from his fellow players, and of course goes on and wins the bracelet.
And eerily familiar, sorry, isn't that how Jennifer Harmon won her bracelet? She had no idea what that game was. They taught her. It was like letterer.
But she got a couple lessons from Howard before she sat down.
Yeah,
I mean, she knew what she was entering.
Yeah, she knew what she was entering, but she didn't know how to play it.
Wait a minute. Why do I have 5 cards? You know, I mean, because usually it's like you're in a horse and you're like, all right, I got the low. And they're like, there's no low. We're playing high. Oh! Right, and they had to figure that out, but this is like a completely different game.
Yeah, it's crazy. It really is. And you know it's crazy when they run this story on like all the news wires and Yahoo.
Everybody loves this story.
You know, when this story happens, it made national news, which is crazy to think about it. You know,
well, and this is a good discussion to have. You know, now we got some mainstream coverage. It's positive. It's not like poker player murders dog, right?
Right, right.
You know, he wins this feel good story. He sits down and doesn't know he wins. But I would say on the flip side, this could be a negative, right? Because now it shows that this guy had no idea what the game was, sits down and wins a bracelet.
Nah, I don't see that as negative.
Well, I don't, but I think that...
Oh, okay. I thought you did. I thought you were trying to start
a
conversation.
Some people say, yeah, well, here, it proves that this is nothing but a game of luck.
Yeah.
I mean, if you could sit down and win a World Series, you know... a World Series bracelet and not have any idea what the game is, how can you say that's skill?
Yeah. And, you know, if you have that conversation with somebody and the person who's defending that it is skill knows what they're talking about, you could totally make the argument that...
Of course, right. Yeah,
he actually knows no limit and he knows poker, so you combine the two. And there is something to be said for, you know, the fact that you're naive to the game. You know, if you're ignorant towards certain things, you don't know that right now this guy's bluffing. You just are going with your instinct.
Of course, right.
You know, yeah. So you don't understand the nuances of the game. Same with the first tournament I ever entered at Derby Lane. I literally had my chips in front of my cards, and I was going to be all in on one hand. And, and the guy says, I'll give you a break. It's your first tournament. I ended up winning the tournament because I didn't really understand the nuances of things.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's that. Yeah, there is definitely some luck involved. But the guy clearly is, if he's got $1,500 burning a hole in his pocket and he's entering a tournament, he knows how to play no limit hold'em, so he knows poker. So, yeah, I think people will try to jump on that and say, oh, this is, you know, it's typical luck poker. No, it's not luck. He had some lucky moments, but he's clearly a decent player. And, you know, but I don't see it as a negative.
No, I don't either. I just hope that the people don't.
But very cool story. It was pretty remarkable. When I'm looking through the Yahoo feed and I see this guy, and I'm like, holy cow, the main event was today? What's going on? It's only June. You know? And then I'm like, oh, okay. Wow, this is cool. It's hilarious. It's hilarious, too, to think that you wouldn't know. How do you not know? The signs are so clear. I mean, I know it says no limit, and that must have been it. He must have stood in line for no limit.
Well, yeah, I didn't dig deep into these stories, so it's possible that he just said, hey, I want to be in the $1,500 event, and... And the $1,500 event was tomorrow. Maybe he forgot to say tomorrow. And the cashier said, all right, 1500 event today is Noah, deuce to seven, here you go.
Yeah.
And didn't look at his ticket. You know, of course, then if he thought it was tomorrow, but I don't know. There's a lot of this story that's kind of weird, I think. But whatever. So the guy sits down and wins, and, you know, hey, that's great. But it is one of those games, too, I think you can pick up. You know, once you understand. There were actually people that in the Antigua Poker Tour event that we did that HTO, right, where we played No Limit Deuce to Seven, is one of the three games that actually didn't know it. And they knew it sitting down. They're like, you know, hey, we'll just figure it out. I know No Limit, or Pot Limit Hold'em, and I know Pot Limit Hold'em. I'll figure out, you know, Deuce to Seven. And really, all you have to know is you're trying, it's a low draw game. You got one draw, and you can't get straights and flushes, right?
Right.
At that point, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of other strategy that you can learn. But at that point, it's pretty simple at that point. And because it's the no limit, the single draw, you can get away with a lot more. But the triple draw limit, that would be a much more difficult game to come into and try to figure out.
Exactly. And that was my point, too, I was going to make, was that when you talk about no limit hold'em, and you always hear the generic discussions and descriptions of the game, they're always saying it's a game of people. You're not playing the cards, you're playing the person. I think it's the exact same thing. You're not playing the cards in No Limit Deuce to Seven. If you understand that concept of playing the person, playing position, and figuring out that guy drew two, I drew one, I know I'm ahead of him, I'm going to bluff him here, or he's bluffing me because there's no way, you know, so that no limit element is what helped him win, exactly, because there's no way he wins it if it's a limit, I don't think.
Well, the other thing about No Limit Deuce to Seven, I remember this, I think this was from Super System, right, where I think it was Doyle Everett with the Shep, maybe I'm wrong, but he said that more people lost their houses in this game than any game ever.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason is, obviously, you have absolutely no, this is the only game you have no information. There's no exposed cards whatsoever, and you've got the one draw. So all you've got to go on is how many cards your opponents draw.
Yep.
And if you're in position, then you have all that information. If you're out of position, you have none of that information. So, and the other thing, too, is, I mean, it's tough to put your whole stack in there with a jack high.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What you need to do sometimes, or 10. So if this guy is just shoving all the time, that's tough, because this is not like No Limit Hold'em where you're like, all right, I'll call you with a pocket threes and hope that the next five cards that come on the flop, turn, and river will give me a set or whatever, right?
Yeah, right.
Once you make that call, you're done. You turn over your 10 and hope your 10 is good. That's
yep.
it.
Yep.
And because of that, people are going to fold more often, right?
You yeah, know? Yeah.
But anyhow, congratulations. And then also, it's not the World Series, but it is out in Vegas. Don't forget the Antioch Poker Tour, the Golden Nugget. It runs through July 3rd. More information at antiochmagazine.com/Golden Nugget. And I'll be back out there.
Right around when this is beginning. Yeah, right around when this is being posted.
So come down and say hi.
Okay, so any updates? Don't forget players looking to win their way aboard our November 7th cruise, which is out of Tampa. Have an online opportunity to do so. CardPlayerClub.com is hosting a free roll on July 10th with a cruise package as its top prize. For details, visit AntiUpCruises.com and click on the Tampa link. Subscription poker is permitted in 37 states and the District of Columbia. There is no cost to enter this tournament, but players looking to play more can pay one low monthly fee and play as much as they like. Also, please note, a similar event scheduled on RaiderPoker.net has been canceled.
And also, don't forget, ballots are still open for our Antiup MPD Most Popular Dealer Contest. Go to antiupmagazine.com/MPD and vote for up to three dealers in each of our five regions. All voters are automatically entered and drawn to win one of more than 400 prizes from our sponsors. Voting is open through July 8th, and iPhone users will need to enable cookies in order to vote. And I'll tell you, these races are really close right now. We've had thousands and thousands of votes, and it's really surprising to me that all the races are going to go down to the wire. So if you have friends that are in this contest, you haven't voted yet, now it's time to support them.
Very cool. Hey, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. It comes from Michael Cantor. Says he got into about three big hands in a row with the same guy, and he won every one. This all happened within about 20 minutes of sitting down at the table. He said, by the third hand, I almost felt bad about beating him. He actually got up from the table to take a break. The following morning at Harrah's, I lost a buy-in to one of the extremely tight players when I had 9-10 to his ace-10 on a jack-queen-king board. A couple of hands later, I had ace-queen, and there were two aces on the board by the river. I bet. He made a big raise, and I said, you have it again? And folded. He showed me ace-king and told my friend sitting next to him, I don't like taking it from the same guy. I know the point is to make money, but and I'm sure pros would have no qualms about taking money from the same person, but do you ever slow down against someone you've been beating all session?
If I ever have somebody that I've been beating all session, I'll let you know, Michael. It's never happened. Never happened to me, ever.
It has happened to me.
I'm going to be an honest human being here and say, yeah, absolutely. I've got feelings for other folks. I want to take their money, but there's been time. I don't want to say there's a difference in here. I don't slow play against people like that, but I might not be as aggressive as I normally am. Okay. If it's down to just that person, that would be the difference I make. Okay. I'm going to say you disagree with me.
No, it's not that I disagree with you entirely. If I think what I'm doing is going to benefit me, then I will be nice. Like, here's a perfect example. We're on the cruise ship. We're playing in our poker room. It's our company. And I've gotten into a pot with someone, and I outplayed them, and I took their whole roll. And then they buy in again. And then we get into a pot, and it's clear that I've got the best hand, and I bet a little bit because I just don't want this person to have a horrible experience on my cruise ship in my poker room against me. Right. So I might take it easy on that player if it looks like, you know, they're just going to keep throwing money at me, you know, and I've had it happen a few times where it's just like, man, I just can't keep taking money from this person. I don't want them to go home saying, yeah, what a great cruise. Yeah, the owner of the company takes all my money twice, you know. Or so there are times like that. If I'm a complete stranger in a complete room, a completely strange room, and I don't have my ante-up gear on, and I'm playing, and there's a guy who just, hey, he's an adult. You know, I'm not being mean about it. We're playing cards. I have aces. He has kings. We get it all in. I have aces. He has kings. We get it all in. Three hands in a row. It just happens that way. I'm not going to not call. I'm not going to – but – I can see what he's saying, and sure, I don't, because I also don't want that guy to be gunning for me either, because that's a different experience that you don't want.
There's some strategy involved.
Right, so there might be something like that, but I never rub it into somebody's face. You know, when we're in a home game, we bust the chops a lot, and I get this reputation of being an ass sometimes or whatever, but when we're in a poker room, I am nothing like that. I am completely just quiet. I don't talk to anybody, hardly ever. Unless it's, you know, an ante-up event and where it pays to be conversational and friendly. But, I mean, in a poker room, I just sit there and play my cards. And if I have a hand or a situation or if I have something that I can expose, I'm playing poker for money. I know you go a lot more for entertainment than I do. I go to win money. And I like to be entertained, but winning money entertains me. So, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. There are instances where, yes, I will be the guy who says, quote, I don't like taking it from the same guy. But most of the time, hey, we're all adults. We're sitting at this table. You know, if you're not adult enough or if you can't control your urges to stop because you're not obviously playing your top poker against me or something like that, then you're going to have to live with the consequences. You're an adult. And I can't be – if I did that all the time, I would never make money.
No, of course not. So, yeah, and I think it's rare. And when I say be nice, again, I think it's not – using every cylinder in the engine.
Right.
You know, for example, I may not check raise or something against a guy that I've just felt it three times. You know, I might just play more ABC straightforward and just, you know, I'm still going to win the pot, right? Still going to get the money. I don't feel like I need to be, you know, using every arrow in my quiver against this guy now that I've already felt it him three times. So, I'm not going to, like, you know, just check the end if I've got monster hand. I'm still going to put a bet out, but maybe I'm not looking for the optimal bet.
Right.
You know, hey, this guy's probably going to call $100, but you know, I've been brutalizing him all day, so I'm going to bet 50 here, knowing he's going to call 50, and I'm still going to win the pot. I just don't. Now, I will fully admit that that is a weakness as a human being, because at poker, you should be playing your best game at all times against everyone. And I can understand that people are upset to hear, you know, either me say that or this guy here and this that's playing against our hero here. But I think we're humans, and you know, and you're right. You know, some of us go out and we want to make money, we want to win money. Obviously, winning money entertains me as well too. But you know, there's times where I just might feel a little guilt and just not in a tournament. That never happens. I'll be honest, in a tournament, because a tournament, it affects everybody else, I think.
Plus, that's different, because it's a one-time buy-in, and someone's gonna felt this guy eventually.
Right. Exactly.
You're not gonna not take. You know, that's different. Yeah, that's a completely different animal to me. I would take even my grandmother's money in a tournament if I had to, because she's gonna lose anyway. Might as well benefit from it. You know. All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's newest social networking site and home of the Antiup group discussions. Comes from Dave Miller. We're going to do something a little different here, because he has like two specific examples he wants addressed, so I'm going to do the first example and give you what Elliot says, and Scott's going to do the second one. So he says he's a dealer in a poker league in New Jersey. Unlike other leagues where the cards are passed around, the league here has dealers at every table.
Very nice, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And as well, they have a four-person for their bigger events. He's read Robert's rules and TDA rules multiple times. As such, he says, I tend to be the rules authority for the league. We try to follow regular casino rules, though in the interest of being a friendly game, we do deviate a little. So he said, recently I got two hypothetical questions. I'll handle the first one here. A player opens betting for 300 and gets callers. On the next street, the same player puts in a 500-unit chip saying, same bet. So he wants to know, what's the bet? He says, in the league, he rules that in the interest of friendliness, the bet is 300, while in a casino, the bet should be 500. The reason is similar to the rule where a player cannot ask a dealer for a count of the pot, except in pot limit games, and that dealers generally don't count an all-in bet until asked for the count. Additionally, requiring the dealer to remember the prior bet can lead to problems if he remembers wrong. So it's as if the player threw the chip in and said nothing. So Elliot says, same bet in this spot means little or nothing. Were the blinds 25-50? So is the same bet 250 and 300? Were the blinds 75-150? Were the blinds 50 and 100? Maybe if the blinds were 150 and 300, I could see allowing a wager of 300. I have no idea what the same bet is here when a single large chip is used. Let me state that the overriding principle in most four-person decisions not involving dealer error, whenever a player puts the four-person in a position where that player makes a four-person read his mind, that player cannot win. The bet is the 500 value of the chip, and the statement is disregarded. Now, before we get to the second part, I have to say that I'm not sure I completely agree with that or whatever. And it's the first time I've actually kind of disagreed. All right. Then, and what my question is, and it's not really a disagreement. My question is, when somebody throws out a single chip and they don't say raise or whatever, is that single chip the actual value, or is it the smallest bet that they have to make because they only threw out a single chip?
If there's no other action, it's the value.
It's the value of the chip. Okay, well, then I agree with it. I couldn't remember. I always remember if they say, are you just calling? Because if it was 25-50 and you're the first person out and you don't say anything, you throw a chip out, they say you just called. That's 50.
True. Yeah, let's say it's pre-flop and the blinds are 25-50, you throw a 500 chip out, you say nothing, you're calling 50.
You're calling 50. So isn't that what's happening
here?
But
this is after the flop.
Right, so then the minimum bet is 50 still.
No, because he's saying same bet. So I'm assuming it's on the flop now. It doesn't say. Yeah, it says on the next street. So on the next street, there's been no action.
Okay.
And you throw a 500 chip in there. It's a $500 bet. There's no room for...
Okay, because even though it's a single chip...
That's what Ellie's saying. It's like now you're asking people to read the mind. Now, obviously, the guy at the same time is saying same bet. So there is some discussion that can be had here.
Yeah.
But, and I guess in this argument, the only bet the previous streak was 300. You know, someone made a 300 and everybody called.
Right.
So I can see how that player is like, come on. You know, the only bet was 300. But this goes back to the same thing, and we're probably going to have one of these on a future show that Elliot just answered as well, too. you know, one of the things that TDA is really big on is trying to get players to get away from what they call non-standard language. Right. And same bet is not standardized language.
Right.
In a poker table, you know, you raise, fold, raise to 500. Those are standard things that everybody understands. When you say same bet, it might be crystal clear in your mind what it means. And it might be in this situation like this one, fairly crystal clear to everybody what you mean. But there's going to be a situation where same bet, you might got confused on what the bet was last time, and now it's confusing, and now you're asking the dealer or the floor person to read your mind, and you can't. So that's kind of why these rules are, and really why they're encouraging people not to say this stuff. You know, if it's 300, it's almost the same syllables to say 300, right?
Right.
One extra syllable than same bet. So just say 300, and you're fine. Right? I mean, yeah. Same bet. It's what are you trying to accomplish by saying same bet? It's just your own internal shorthand. Yeah. Just say 300.
Yeah.
Yep. And you avoid it. Absolutely. And really, that's what it is. And I get why players are upset about it because, like, you know, in this case, I mean, again, in this case, I think it's, I can see a player just shaking his head, like, come on, you got to be kidding me, right?
Right.
But it's not that this case that the floor person is ruling on. There's going to be other cases where it's not as clear as this. And that way, you got to be consistent with that when, you know, use weird language, it's going to be consistent. So
now, if he didn't say anything and threw that chip out, though, it would have been
500.
It still would have been 500. It wouldn't have been the big blind.
No, because there's no bet at that point.
Yeah. That's right. There's no bet. He's the first person to bet. That's right. Okay. That's cool. Yeah, I want to make sure that's right. That's what I'm forgetting is the between the blinds, preflop when the small and big are already out there, and then the next street. So, okay. I was confused that it was on the street. I'm forgetting that it's the next street. Okay, cool.
So the old mantra is always verbalize your action, right? Yep. And the new mantra is always verbalize your action correctly.
Yeah, that's right. Addendum.
All right, so our hero Dave asked a second question. Again, this hypothetical. He says, a player opens betting by putting in 3 500-unit chips and says, yo, what's the bet? I would expect that the bet is ruled and announced by the dealer, 1,100. The reason is simple. Though yo is a craps term, it's a well-defined craps term, one that all dealers should know. Since many poker players also play craps, it's a term that most players should know as well. Therefore, it should not lead to any sort of ambiguity. Elliot says, a statement of yo at the poker table means nothing, as it is certainly not the dice table and players are currently at. The overriding principle from the previous situation applies most readily here. I am all for being player-friendly and accommodating, but a big part of that is also taking time to patiently educate the players on how to sit down at a poker table and play without grinding the pace down to halt by making every statement a guessing game. The bet of 3 chips of any same denomination would stand as is.
Yes. That, to me, I talked to you before the show. I said, I got some questions for you, buddy, because I don't know. What is this yo? Why is it 1,100? And then you're like, yeah, yo at the table means 11. I'm like, I don't play craps. I don't gamble. I play poker. You know, I'm a bowler too. If I went to a table and took 225-unit chips and threw them out and said turkey, am I going to expect everyone to know that means 3 strikes in a row? That's 30 pins. That's a 30 bet. That's ridiculous. I would never ever, and I would never side with someone who said yo and say, oh yeah, his bet's 1,100. You should know that. There's no way I should know that. You can't take other facets of life and apply them to poker and say, well, you should be more, you know, cultured. Or that's bull. There is no way I would have ever agreed to 1,100. That guy just bet 1,500.
And here's the thing. Even if you want to strangely argue that it's craps and it's poker and it's all in the same casino and everybody should know, which I don't agree with either. I'm on that bar. Yo has so many other connotations.
Yes.
I mean, I could be like, you know, Fastball could be walking in the casino when I'm betting on and go, yo!
That's right.
Doesn't mean I'm saying anything about the bet. I'm throwing 3 chips in and saying yo to my buddy, right?
Yep.
Or maybe the cocktail waitress is walking by. Yo,
I need
give me another Fiji water.
That's right.
So, this is kind of the problem, and this will come back again. As I said, we got a really good call to floor that'll be on in a future show about this, and Elliot says the same thing. Don't make us guess at what you're saying. Just because it's clear in your mind what you mean doesn't mean it's clear in everybody's mind. And that's what you got to remember at the table.
Absolutely.
Here, obviously, our hero, and I'm not making not knocking him at all, to him, it's very clear that yo is a craps term. This is what the guy meant. But the lesson here is that, obviously, not everybody believes that.
Yeah, there's no way everyone can be that well-versed. It's all relative. Yo is an accepted term at the craps table, and people understand it there, I guess. But you can't translate that here, just like I did with bowling.
Well,
bowling
here's the other thing. You know, at the craps table, it's the dealer that needs to figure it out. I mean, the players
yeah.
know what you're doing. I mean, you're not playing against the other players. So, and when somebody, I mean, this is one of the reasons people don't play craps, right? Because there's so much of the shorthand craziness that goes on. But if you're a player, then you throw out a, you know, give me the yo. I don't care what you're doing. I'm not betting that. I'm betting, you know, the pass line or the come line or whatever.
Right.
You can do whatever you want to with all your crazy words.
Yep.
It's not something I'm going to be paying attention to necessarily.
That's right.
Obviously, the dealer has to figure out when you throw yo out that you know, that's a different story. But yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it was a great call for her. You know, this is the kind of stuff that I like us educating folks on.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't always have to happen. It could be hypothetical like this, and that's cool, and thinking up of things that could happen. And that's something that, you know, everyone should consider. If you got you wonder what would happen if this happened, well, let us know. We'll still address it because it's still hypothetical. It could possibly happen. So, hey, we got a brand new O'Malley's move. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated in a 2-5 casino cash game. The action has been surprisingly timid, with us being the only one showing any aggression. Because of this, we are up nearly 300 without having won any notably large pots, just several small ones. We sit with 795. The game is 8-handed. The blinds post, under the gun limps, and it's folded around to us on the cutoff with the Jack of Diamonds, Jack of Clubs. This is a pretty good hand, and one we can expect to take down right away with a raise. We make it $25 to go, which has been enough to take down pots up to this point. It's folded around to the under the gun who makes the call. This player is very patient, and probably plays too tight. He sneered when he saw us raise, almost like he's getting sick of our aggression. Perhaps he's calling loosely to take a stand? He sits with 400 and checks dark. So we're heads up going to a flop with about $50 in the pot. It comes down the 10 of diamonds, 4 of diamonds, deuce of diamonds. Not a horrible flop, all unders giving us a flush draw with an overpair. Since our opponent checked dark, we decide to make a bet. $35 sounds about right. Our opponent almost beats us into the middle with a call. That's weird. With about 120 in the pot, the turn pairs the board, the 10 of clubs. Once again, our opponent checks. We're going to play some pot control here and check behind. His play just seems extremely suspect right now. Not his usual MO. The river is the 3 of diamonds, putting 4 diamonds on the board. Our opponent thinks only for a short while before making it $50 to go. Just under half the pot. What's the play?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations. The podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is One Hand at a Time. Home of poker instructional videos online. And if listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. And it comes from our good friend Rob Paul Chapman, all the way from across the pond. My favorite British listener, because he took us up, my wife and I, to that great restaurant.
Yes, right? That's right.
Yep. Yeah. And this is an interesting hand. So it's obviously there's a poker hand here that we're going to discuss, but there's also some etiquette that we're going to discuss in this as well too, which I think is great. All right, so he says this is a six-handed pub cash game, albeit one that takes place in the back room of a famous independent music venue where all the players are friends and therefore plays like a home game. Rob Paul's a bassist, which I always make fun of him for because no one wants to be a bassist, right?
You're crazy.
The one person in the band that's
really where do you come up with these things? You need to get some empirical evidence behind you with some of these things.
No, I don't want to get too far off the track, but I actually had a conversation with Rob Paul when I was over in England about it. I'm like, all right, you got to answer me this, Rob. When a bass player leaves the band and is replaced by another bass player, do you ever notice?
Am I supposed to react to this?
Because I mean, the lead singer leaves, yeah, you're going to notice. It's good. You know what? There's a difference, right? Or the lead guitarist leaves, you're probably going to notice. But a bassist?
I'm going to say if John Entwistle left The Who, people would notice.
Well, and this was kind of part of my discussion was because I went to see Van Halen before him, and Wolfgang Van Halen is no Michael Anthony.
Yeah, right.
So I was almost proving my own point, but I had to go to that. That's one band I could come up with. The rest, who's playing bass tonight? Who cares? Bass.
Who cares? I can't believe you.
All right, but
You just like insulted one quarter of, well, except for Rush, because Rush is a trio.
Quintet or a trio.
You just basically insulted one quarter of every band
not
on the planet.
Insulting? A bass is a very important part of the band.
Who has absolutely no effect on the band.
I'm just saying it's a very replaceable part of the band.
Oh, man. I hope there are like a billion bassists that listen to our show and are going to bombard you now.
We'll see what Ron Paul's fans say, but I think he tended to agree with me. All right, but anyhow, this is a normally a lighthearted, excessively beer-assisted, but very competitively played monthly two-table tournament made up of primarily of often quite successful musicians, plus me. But due to England's cricket team playing a test match around the corner, we're low on numbers. And he said, that's the most British sentence ever written, right?
Yeah.
without enough and even for a sit and go, we offer a six-match cash game. But of the six, only two of us regular play any cash, and two players have never played a cash game at any point. Apart from one relatively new, clearly quite aggressive player, we all know each other's games pretty well. Says, I'm no world beater, but we're one of the two better players at the table, and that we're capable of switching up our play when required. Three of the other four are pretty solid, and one, the newest of the game, is a complete maniac. It's myself and the other stronger player who are most used to cash, so we've been setting the pace for bet sizing, etc., given that these are predominantly tournament players, we've been able to set the average raise to a manageable 7 pounds.
That's heavy.
Yep. I don't know how many ounces that is, but... the blinds post, and we are under the gun with the ace of spades, 7 of spades.
I like that hand because it's 6 max and got some players who aren't exactly well-versed in cash game. So I'd make a 3X, whatever that is. What are the poundages again?
He says the average raise is a manageable 7 pounds. So
yeah, I'd make it 7 pounds.
I'm going to guess it's a 1, 2 pound. He actually didn't say, but I'm going to guess
it. Yeah, I'm going to make it 7 pounds.
What's the average poundage? That's pretty funny. All right, so here's kind of my concern here, right? In a normal 6-max game, I'm going to be raising this all the time because right. It's 6-max, right? And we got an ace, it's suited, and you can't just wait for premium hands to 6-max. You got to get in there and mix it up because the blinds come around quickly, right?
Right.
However, in a game when there seems to be so many newish players, as he's described here, right? I'm going to tend to think that we're going to get a lot more calls than we normally would in a 6-max. Now, he didn't say that, so I don't know. But if that's the case, if everybody's calling every pot, then I'm not going to be raising with this one. I'm either going to limp or fold. Probably limp, but because it's so tough now because you're going to have all kinds of aces calling. And it's great if it's ace 6 or less. It's not great if it's ace 8 or higher, you know, depending on what the flop is.
Hmm.
So that's going to be my determination.
Well, yeah, we don't know anything about
the game.
If the
raise is going to do what I normally want the raise to do, then I'm fine raising. If the raise is just going to build a huge pot that I'm going to have to fight 6 people for on the flop, then I'm going to save whatever excessive poundage I'm putting.
Well, you know, traditionally I would raise. We don't know how the game is being played. We know the personality. We don't even know the personality, but we know the experience of these players. But we don't necessarily know that's going to be that way. So coming into a cold like this, I'm going to raise. Just because if there's a full ring, under the gun folds, under the gun plus one folds, under the gun two, and it gets to you, you know, or even another place after that, you look down at A7 suited, I think you're going to answer the pot for a raise. So
absolutely.
I think it's the same thing.
Like I said, generally speaking, I'm always going to be raising.
Yeah.
So, it's just the fact that we're playing with newbies here that has me a little worried. All right, so here it says, this is a hand I might play more passively in the tournament, possibly even full, but in a 6-max cash game, I'm keen to set the pace with hands like this. I don't like the idea of a family pot, where if an ace hits, I'm going to be caught in two minds out of position, but I quite like hands like this out of position if I'm brave enough to play them aggressively. They can flop really well and give you great trapping opportunities, but if they flop poorly or middling, you can easily represent better than you have, so I make it squiggly 7 pounds to go.
There you go.
The two to my left fold, the button calls, as does a small blind, while the big blind folds, giving us a pot of 23 pounds. Flop comes the queen of spades, 8 of spades, 7 of clubs. The small blind, which is the other decent player at the table, he thinks is tight aggressive, but I wouldn't say he's as tight as he thinks he is. He's capable of splashing around early doors with all sorts of hands. He's also the most confident in bluffing. Despite probably having the best record of anyone at the table, he's having a bad day. Has already rebought once. He's been caught out a bit trying to exert too much dominance over the table, by the solid, steady players who he found harder to budge off their hands than he thought, although he's mostly crippled by one of the other players who backdoored a runner-runner flush after the villain had flopped a straight. Since then, rather than slowing down, he seems to have persisted with the strategy on the basis of it likely coming right in the end. Stubborn, I like that. He's not quietly full on tilt, but in a quite frustrated way some way along the line. However, in this instance, the villain checks, and it's on us. Boy, that was the longest description of a check ever.
Wow, I thought for sure he was betting, too, the way he was describing them.
All right, so it's on us.
Yeah, I see no reason not to bet. We've got the nut flush draw. We have an overcard. We have a pair, right? Is it seven of clubs, right?
Seven of clubs, yep.
Yeah, we have a pair, and we took control of the hand pre-flop. I mean, I'm betting like 18 pounds here.
Yeah, this is a great flop for us. Yeah. It's like a World's Fair flop, right?
Yeah, I'm betting 18 pounds.
Okay. And, all right, so he says, the player still to act is the most passive at the table. I've never seen him bluff, and his style is very ABC. Although there's not much that's too sophisticated about his play, he's often rewarded by hanging back and picking off the right positions. However, he's also a bit loose getting into pots pre-flop, which along with an inclination to chase draws is his biggest leap given a straight down the line style. This is a pretty good flop for us. We've hit a part of the board, albeit a bottom pair, but with the draw to the nut flush and the ace still in the back pocket. However, as the first race, we've got all sorts of hands we can represent here if it comes to it. So we bet 16 pounds.
Yeah, I was gonna say 15 to 18 before, so that works for me.
The button calls, and so it is a small blind. Wow. So three-handed, we just build a pot, and I'm starting to get a little worried now.
Two callers, jeez.
The turn is the eight of diamonds, so our board now is a queen of spades, eight of spades, seven of clubs, eight of diamonds. The board is paired now, and villain one checks again.
You know, at this point, I think I might check. It's not that I'm giving up, but I think that these guys, if they hit their third eight, they might make a value bet here, but I don't know if they're going to bet a ton. I don't know. They could bet a ton thinking that you're drawing, but you bet into them, and you raised pre-flop, so they may not think you're on a flush draw. They might think you're taking a stab at it with ace-king, and then when we all called, you're afraid of it. But I don't know how much they're going to bet. That's the thing. I still have the nut flush draw, but now I'm far from the nuts of right. The actual hand, so I feel like a check. I might check this hand now.
I think it's a pot control check here, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That if they, hopefully they
and then if you happen
much.
To hit your spade, then yeah. You feel a little more confident, even though it's not the nuts anymore. Or if another seven comes, you know, if the chick's around, maybe no one has the eight, and now you vote it up. So I think we're just checking for pot control here.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
All right, our hero says, we think about continuing to bet, but it's likely that the only hands that would call us would be ahead of us at the moment, and the only hands we'd get rid of are those who we are currently ahead of anyway. The only draw that concerns us is the straight draw, but a check here seems sensible as we stand to make a lot more out of our flush draw. Should we hit it? If we can keep any other weaker flush draws that might be around. Villain 2 almost certainly doesn't have a queen or better, otherwise he would have re-raised the previous round. He might have an 8, but if so, we'll find out with a check, as he won't be able to risk extracting a bit of value this round. We check, and so does a button, giving us a river for free.
Huh. That's weird.
It is, isn't it? So now we really have no idea what's going on here. The river is the queen of clubs, giving us a final board, a queen of spades, queen of clubs, eight of spades, eight of diamonds, seven of spades. Pot is still 71 pounds, and this time the small blind bets 100 pounds.
Well, I mean, all we have is an ace kicker now. We're literally playing the board, right? It's queens and eights.
Yep.
So our seven got counterfeited, so I'm out of there. Especially if we got away with checking. I mean, we only put very little in this pot. I'm not going to call 100 on hoping my ace plays. That's just silly to me. I mean, a lot of guys do that. I've seen that a lot, especially on the ship when we're playing the cruise ship and guys are playing 1-3 and hold them, and they'll believe you have an ace, you believe they have an ace, and then they split the pot. But it's silly. But that happens, and he'll get me out, I think, because I really don't think. It just seems weird that I guess if somebody had a queen, they might have. But the 8 is the thing. The 8 is what's scaring me.
Yeah.
You know? And if why would the guy bet now with just an ace? When we were showing strength, at least early on, we could have a pair that's over the 8s. Over the 8s. So we could have queens and 9s. And if he has an ace and he's doing that with an ace, you know, we have him beat. So that's a reckless bet to me with just an ace. So
It's only reckless if somebody has a better hand, which of course we don't know. But if the small blind just has an ace, I think it's a beautiful bet because now, as you said, I'm out. All I have is an ace, right? It's a tremendously big bet. It's one more in the pot, and so if I'm sitting there with an ace, which I am right now, now I got to think, hey, am I wagering 100 pounds to either be wrong or split the pot and get my 100 back plus 35 out of the pot, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't seem ever worth it to me. So it's almost one of those where you see the guy bet and you're like, I know you're full of it, but it's too good of a bet for me to call. Nice play.
Heads up, I might agree with that, but he has another player too.
And that's the other problem is you got a player behind you.
So this guy is now you don't even know if you call that 100, the guy behind you is going to raise now.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's just a bad call, I think, with the eight. It might be a good bet in a small blind, but he's also, if he's bluffing, he's trying to bluff two players with one bet. What were the other guys sticking around with? You know, did you have a queen, but it was a horrible queen, and you were afraid because you raised pre-flop? So that guy was afraid of you because he might have kings, so he was being cautious. Now he's filled up. The guy behind you is filled up, and this guy bets 100 with just an ace. Yeah. I think we're beat by one of these two guys. I'm getting out.
Right. It just might not be the one that bet right now.
Yeah, it might not be him. But, again, that's why I think it's a reckless bet because you have two players behind you, one who showed strength preflop. That guy could very easily have nines.
It's true.
So I just think it's reckless.
And if he has a queen, it's not reckless at all because he's, essentially.
Right, he's got the nuts, essentially.
Almost got the nuts.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Our hero says this is a massive overbet, so we're immediately suspicious. However, we still have someone to act behind us. Realistically, though, what could either have that's beating us? If villain two had a queen or an eight, we'd know it by now. After passive check calls from villain one, he's either slow playing to reel us in or he was drawing. Given that the draws miss, it seems likely that despite our sevens now not playing, our ace could be good here against villain one. Villain two has slightly less known quantity. He's had to have something to keep calling. Pre and post flop, lower pocket pair, a decent ace, or perhaps they also could be on the straight or flush draw, or queen or ace seems very unlikely, and villain two is not the trappy type. But could nines or tens have potentially played it this way? Called raise pre-flop without a raise, entirely possible. Called my c-bet, second pair, yes, that's definitely possible too. Checking for caution on the fourth street when middle pair hits a trip, that story adds up. Very good point, too.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, nines.
So at this point, all of our instincts say we're ahead of villain one, but we're less sure about villain two. And I am, and sorry to both of you, as I know you're not fans of this, I'm a bit of a talker at the table. I like to talk my way through my thought processes and when I think of other people's actions. I don't do this in other games, but this is a friendly game, and I'm one of the more experienced players in the game. It's quite fun. I see something along the lines of, quote, I'm very tempted to call here, but with one player still to act behind me, I've got to work out if I can. In retrospect, this might have been bad form. I'll let you be the judge of that, and we'll talk about that in a minute. If it is, apologies. However, what I did not expect to happen was what happened next. As I'm staring deep into what looks like building anxiety in villain one and pondering whether I should call, but then reminding myself verbally that there's still someone left to act behind me, villain two announces not to worry about him as he's planning to fold. I've seen people folding out of turn before, but never at such a critical moment and so deliberately that could affect the play so much. Had I been villain one, I probably would have gone apoplectic at this point. But for whatever reason, villain one seems not to massively mind, as poker is a game of incomplete information. This effectively gives us position and massive advantage to make this decision, so we're certainly not complaining. If we take the intention to fold from villain two as genuine, we now have to work out whether ace high is good here against villain one. There's a very good chance that we're up against another ace for a split pot. The eight seems hugely unlikely unless it's ace-eight, and similar queen doesn't add up due to the way that this has been played. He'd most likely have check-raised ace-eight, and imagine given the wet board on the flop, he would have re-raised a decent queen on the flop. He would have re-raised ace of spades, king of spades, jack of spades, pre-flop. Again, given board, I can't imagine with this style of play, he would have check-called nine of spades or ten of spades. I expect him to bet them out on the flop and push the draws out and work out whether anyone's got a queen. Everything here points to a misdraw. If we're wrong or we're behind, why the massive overbet? It's a bet that screams, please don't call me. It's only backs up my thinking that we're ahead here. I consider a re-raise, but the only caller's going to get here from hands beating us and we're wrong. He's a decent player, so there's still a chance we might not even push off a similar hand to us. If he's come to a similar conclusion, had we bet the turn, we might have been able to represent a premium pair and get an ace to fold. If But if we walk through the same story we have, it might not be enough to shove them off. So having built up the story, we announced this might be nuts. We're gonna call with just a two paired board and ace. Villain two mucks as promised, and villain one mucks his hand too before we even turn ours over. He later confirmed he was drawing, but declined to go into detail. We rag in 171-pound pot with our raggy ace.
How often do you think I send in hands just to brag? I mean, first of all, that was like, my eyes are glazing over listening to you describe all that. I couldn't even follow half of it. It was so much information. And it just seems like, all right, Ra, you know, you're sending his hand in because you just want to tell us how you made a great call, you know. So I'm going to focus on the etiquette thing because, to me, it's still a bad call. Because you don't know that guy's going to actually fold behind you anyway. He could just be saying that because you were saying something, which to me, I think he shouldn't have said anything. When there's another player in the hand, you shouldn't say anything.
No, verbal is binding unless the action changes. So I think in a casino, he would have been bound to fold.
Yeah. Still, I mean, if you raise, then he's got, you can change his option.
Well, if you raise, the action changes. Yeah. Right. If you just call, the action doesn't change, and I think he's verbally committed to folding.
Yeah.
Which I guess is an interesting part. But anyhow, you're right. The actual hand is less interesting to me than the etiquette breach here. Right?
Besides, the way, I'm not exactly sure. Can you tell me again what he said about I'm going to fold anyway? Did he say, how did he say it?
Let's see. Actually, it's not a quote from Villain 2. He just says, announces not to worry about him as he's planning to fold.
Yeah, see, if there's sort of an if statement, then it's not... You're not bound by it either.
True. Right.
So even that, he still could not have folded. I mean, there's no verbal is binding when it's your action, but if it's a future action and it's an if statement or something like that, oh, don't worry, if you call, I'm folding. That's an if statement that he doesn't have to do anything. So I'm just...
Well, those conditional statements are littered throughout the TDA rules.
Yeah, so I'm worried about it. You know, I'm worried about him too. So I just think it was the right call. But I don't think it was the right play, if that's correct. I don't know. It just felt funny to me. And I don't think you should ever say anything when there's another player in the hand, ever.
Right, exactly. And I had this conversation with him, too, that, I mean, he did breach etiquette. Now, it's a friendly game in a pub. We're all friends. That's probably why player one didn't say anything to him. But he does that in a casino. Somebody might take his base and pop him in the face with it, right? That's what you get for being a bass player.
Slapping the bass, man.
Because obviously you're affecting action at that point. And the point is that player one has made a bet, but he still retains action, right? You know, if you raise or the other guy raises, he still has a chance to act. But right now, I mean, you're in control of this hand, and you're giving information to the player that hasn't acted yet, that will have to act, that he didn't.
Right,
he
wasn't privy to. Right, it's not fair to the small blind.
Exactly.
It's not fair to him. That's what your comment is doing. Whether it's harmless or whether it, you know, whatever. Now this guy got called by you because you got information from the third player that you weren't supposed to get because what you did was unethical or whatever you want to call, however you want to label it. Just not really, it's frowned upon. And you shouldn't be doing that. And you probably would have gotten some sort of penalty or something. I don't know at a cash game what they do for penalties. Do they even do that? I don't know. But that's just not right.
And it certainly had a huge effect on the hand here, right?
Because he called.
It got the other guy to say, hey, I'm going to fold. And that was the biggest part of the decision right now is trying to figure out what this third guy is going to do, right?
Yeah. And you got him to admit he's going to fold, which made you call, which now affects the guy who made the bet, because if you don't say anything, you may fold thinking the guy behind you is going to call, then the guy folds on, the other guy wins the pot. That's a 100-pound swing right there, and that's just not copacetic. So.
Yeah, so he asked me when's the right time to table talk, assuming that he knows that we don't. And, you know, and it is. It's only when
heads up
and the action's complete.
Yeah.
You know, if your opponent is all in at that point, he has no other play at this point, so now you can talk his ear off if you want, but... He's just made a bet. Even then, I don't think
you can talk. You can talk then.
But you shouldn't, I don't think. That's my point.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think they would give you any trouble for that, though.
It depends. We've had some discussion. Again, we had the TDA 7 coming up
here. Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see if they talk about it again. But that did come up with the last one, is that I believe at the World Series you're allowed to talk, but other TDA doesn't allow you to talk anymore.
Yeah, there are a lot of tournaments. So cash game, this is a cash game, though. So cash game, you could have talked as much as you wanted. And that's a thing, so I don't know.
But definitely not when there's three people in there.
Right, definitely not three. Always heads up. But interesting. We don't usually get with the hands of the week, we usually don't get ethical dilemmas. We usually just get straight up stuff. So that was cool that he sent that in.
The hand of the week on steroids.
All right. I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.